Thanks a lot for the invitation to tell you about this work. It's actually my first time at Strings, and I'm having a lot of fun. I'm sure I'll have even more fun coming days. I want to tell you about this work that I've done over the last couple of years with a bunch of collaborators, including some like great students, which are in red on the slide. And it's about soft theorems, symmetry, and geometry. So just to start with something that you all know, soft theorems are the statement that when we take the momentum of a particle in the scattering amplitude to be very small, this is something that we can do for massless particles, then there's some universal behavior. There's a universal formula that tells us that, the result is some operator acting on some lower point amplitude. And perhaps the earliest example of this is a soft photon theorem in electromagnetism, which famously says that this is the result, like a leading order. You just have a formula in terms of the polarization and the momentum of the soft photon that comes from three-point factorization, and there's a subleading order. There's the angular momentum acting on the lower point amplitude. Okay, and there are similar formulas for like gluons, gravitons, pions, and everyone has their favorite perspective on what's the reason that these soft theorems exist. And a very common one is that soft theorems are a consequence of symmetry. So it depends who you talk to. Which kind of symmetry they're talking about is different, but can be asymptotic symmetries or spontaneously broken symmetries, as I'll review in a second. There's other people who just say, okay, soft theorems are a statement about decoupling, in effective field theory, the fact that like soft degrees of freedom don't couple to other particles. And what I want to tell you about is like a third perspective on, these soft theorems that that has to do with the fact that soft theorems tell us something about the space of vacua of QFTs or of theories in general. And in particular, tell us about the geometry of the space of vacua. But before getting there, let me review what's the usual understanding of, the reason for soft-scalar theorems, which is indeed about symmetry. So when we have a spontaneously broken symmetry, like pions in QCD, which kind of nonlinear realize the, Carroll symmetry of QCD, and so there's some shift symmetry for the pions, and hence the current is linear in these pions. And this means that the current is basically a creation operator for this. And you can show that conservation of this current tells you that the pion is massless. So that's a statement of Gaussian's theorem that we're all familiar with. But there's more than that. So if you look at the interactions of the pions, they're also constrained by the spontaneously broken symmetry. And the conservation of this broken current tells us things like the Adler zero. It tells that if you take a pion and you make its momentum small, the amplitude is zero. And similarly, if you take two pions and you take the momentum small, what you see is that there's some non-abelian symmetry, and you see the commutator of the broken charges acting on the lower point amplitude. And this just stems from the Ward identity for that non-abelian symmetry and the fact that the current creates pions and that it's conserved. Okay? However, Gaussians are not the only kinds of massless scalars that we have in our theories. Many of our favorite theories come with a space of vacua, which in some cases is spanned by Gaussians. It's swept by a bunch of Gaussians. Like in the case of Maximal Suzy, one of our favorite theories, n equals 4 super Young Mills, has some Coulomb branch, and the scalars that label, whose VEV label every point in that Coulomb branch, are just a scale in the vector multiplet, and they're just a bunch of pions for the R symmetry and a dilaton. But more generally, with less supersymmetry or in other examples, we can have a small less space of vacua where the scalars are just some moduli. They have nothing to do with symmetry breaking. And the question that we ask is, okay, what does the soft limit of an amplitude in this case tell us? And the answer, as I already advertised, is that they encode the geometry of the moduli space in a very precise way. Okay, so this talk will be about infinitesimal distances in the moduli space rather than infinite distances than we heard from Irene. Okay, so this is the outline. First, I'll review some statements about the geometry of moduli spaces, and in particular in this case of scattering amplitudes. Then I'll present the proof of the, or not the proof, but the statement of these geometric soft theorems, and then I'll have some comments about what happens beyond scalars. Okay, so let's get started. So this is just a review, something that probably most of you know about, and it also appeared in Irene's talk in different guys. So as I mentioned, there's a moduli space of vacua, and there's a bunch of scalars whose target space is that geometry. And the Lagrangian can be organized in terms of terms with different derivative order. And field redefinitions of these fields are just some change of coordinate in this target space. And indeed, the terms with different derivative order, they just transform as some tensor. So famously, the leading order. So this is some potential, but you can have a two derivative term which contains the kinetic term, but more generally, there's some metric on the moduli space, which could be singular or not, depending where you are. And okay, this is very familiar from string worksheet, but it's a more general statement about EFTs for massless particles and for scalars, more generally. Okay, but we want to talk about scattering amplitudes. When we need to choose a point in the moduli space, some VEV for these scalars, to talk about an amplitude. And as opposed to the Lagrangian or the fields itself, amplitudes are field redefinition invariant. Okay? So that means that if I do a change of coordinates, well, the change is going to be proportional to the equations of motion, so it's going to vanish on shell or asymptotically. And so we learned that actually the amplitudes, they don't change under the field redefinitions. However, they depend on some extra data, which is the wave function normalization, which is just a choice of an orthonormal frame in the tangent space of the moduli space. Okay, so amplitudes are actually sections of some power of the tangent space, and they depend on geometric invariants, as I'll show you some examples in a second. Okay, so amplitudes live on the tangent space, not on the moduli space itself. And for instance, I'll show you some formulas how the amplitudes depend on the curvature and its derivatives. So these are some examples at tree level. So up here, this is just a theory that has only two derivative terms, and I showed you the 4, 5, and 6-point amplitudes in those series. I'm just showing you the 6-point amplitudes so that you see that there's also factorization and contact terms and things like that. There's no 3-point amplitude because these are massless scalars. But as I promised, they just depend on the Riemann curvature and some derivatives of the Riemann curvature evaluated at the vacuum, at the VEV. And down here, there's some the same for a theory with only 4 derivative interactions. OK. So now we are ready to introduce a statement of these geometric sub-theorems. And it's actually very simple. The statement is that if you take the sub-limit of any massless scalar, and you only need the symmetry, whatever symmetry you have, to protect it against getting a mass. It doesn't need to be a Goldstone. It could be any massless scalar. This is the result. The result is the covariant derivative of the lower point amplitude. And then there's some term, if you have other massless some massive scalars floating around, there's some other term, which is like a usual like soft pole that we have familiar for Weinberg soft theorems and things like that. And actually, there's an understanding of why this term has to be there. And the reason is the following. Taking a derivative with respect to the VEV is not an on-shell operation. If I take p squared equals m squared, that's something which is p squared minus m squared is something that is zero for a scattering amplitude. But if I take a derivative of that, it wouldn't be zero. So you can think of this second term as some sort of on-shell connection that is making sure that this whole operation annihilates p squared minus m squared, that it's actually well-defined on-shell. Whereas either like the first term or the second term by itself wouldn't be well defined. Okay, so there's some derivative and there's just the 3-point emission that we are familiar with, and so this is the precise statement that that yes, the soft moduli encode the geometry of the moduli space, and let us move around. So let me show you some examples from the amplitudes I wrote above. So let's take this 5-point amplitude in the two derivative theory, and let's take the fifth momentum to zero, and as you can see, these guys vanish, and then I just have the covariant derivative of the lower point amplitude. Okay, so this is a tree level for a theory where you're somewhere where the curvature and its derivative are small, where kind of the moduli space is pretty smooth, then you can trust tree level. But more generally, it could be more complicated. And here's a 4-derivative order, the same. All of these terms vanish when you take the fifth particle to zero, and then you find just the covariant derivative of the 4-point amplitude. This is when there's no massive particles around. All right, so let me make some comments. As I said, this is the precise encoding of the intuition that a soft scalar should just be some shift in the VEV. But one has to account for the fact that the space of vacua can be curved in general, and the precise statement is the soft theorem. Okay? I won't show the proof here, but it's actually very simple. It's some simple Spurian analysis. You take the VEV, you upgrade it to a Spurian, and then you can cook up a new symmetry that you shift the scalar and the Spurian at the same time, and it just follows from the word identity for that spurious symmetry. As I mentioned, it's valid for any massless scalar, not only Nyman-Wolf and bosons. So it challenges the common law that self theorems stem from symmetry. The more general statement I would say is that self theorems just move us out of the space of vacuum of a theory. Sometimes every point in the space of vacuum looks identical because there's a symmetry that relates different points, but sometimes no. Okay, we can also take multi-self theorems and we can learn some things about the space of vacuum. So for instance, if we take a double self theorem in different orders, we can just measure the curvature of the space of vacua in using a very simple prescription. And okay, if you take the two momenta to zero simultaneously, it's a bit more complicated. So there's several terms. And the difference is that actually we are moving in different paths along the space of vacua, and we are seeing the curvature. So every path that you take, you would find a different way. And so every way of taking the self-limit should give you kind of a different path in the space of vacua. And more general, if you take the n particle soft, you would expect that you can move kind of order by order in some neighborhood and move around in the space of vacua. And if you knew all the scattering amplitudes, presumably you could move around, at least until you hit some singularity. Okay. So in order to move around, we would require the knowledge of all of the amplitudes. But for instance, you could imagine that if there's somewhere where the EFT breaks down, there's some singularity there, you could detect it, not by going to high energies, but by looking at many, many particles going soft and seeing that there's some tiny feature with the amplitudes. And these soft theorems would let you predict how that happens. And there's a converse statement, which is that if we know like the four-point amplitude, true level, with its full dependence on the VEV, one can actually construct on-shell recursive relations, which I won't explain, but you can ask me at the end if you're interested. Okay, what's special when we have symmetry? Okay, as you might know, if we have a symmetry in the space of vacuum, this is just having some killing vector, so that the two derivative term is left invariant. And the word identity tells us that that actually the Lie derivative of the amplitude will be zero. So typically we only have one of these terms, because the amplitude is the covariant derivative of the amplitude is zero. So for an unbroken symmetry, you would only see this term. But this is a more general statement, and it tells you that the derivative of the amplitude is related just to multiplying by the derivative of the killing vector. And that's why when we have symmetry, the self theorems in general, they're multiplicative. You don't need to know the dependence on the VEV of the amplitude. There's some number that you multiply the amplitude by. So this is the precise statement. When you do have a killing vector, then you can rewrite the soft theorem in this simpler way just by using this. And for instance, one can just rederive the usual statements for Goldstones. So if I have a familiar pattern of symmetry breaking G to H, we know that the scalars parameterize this coset G mod H. These are the commutation relations for the unbroken and broken generators. And in general, for a non-symmetric coset, then you can have this on the right-hand side. So there's actually not an Adler zero for non-symmetric cosets, but there's some structure constant that you see here. And the symmetric case, you just find the zero because these structure constants are zero. Okay, so this is kind of a simple way to prove the Adler zero, or more general soft theorems for Goldstones using our soft theorem. We just need to compute this derivative of the killing vector and see that it actually corresponds to this structure constant. And similarly for other types of Goldstones. So for a self-dilaton, it's even simpler. So the dilaton is the Goldstone for spontaneously broken scale invariants. So it's actually a flat direction in the moduli space. And then there's like a one-line proof of the self-dilaton theorem just using dimensional analysis and the fact that the self-dilaton will just be an ordinary derivative of the amplitude. And by dimensional analysis, we have the usual dilatation operator, which you can also reach using the word identity for dilatations and more familiar current algebra proofs. Okay, but I would say that this is a more general perspective that then we can specify in the case of Goldstones to reproduce the known results. Okay, so that's mostly it for theories with only scalars. So we want to go beyond. So the first thing that one might try is to just couple these scalars to other types of matter, like fermions and vectors. And so usually what we say is that if you have a bunch of fermions, this tells you that there's some vector bundle over the moduli space. And then the couplings of these fermions to the scalars, they just tell you that there's some metric on the fibers and there's some connection on this vector bundle. And similarly for vectors, there's some metric, which again is a kinetic term for the vectors. And maybe you're more familiar with this for the symmetric case where all of these vector bundles are just the tangent space because they're related by supersymmetry, but more generally you would have like different bundles. So you could ask, well, do self-moduli realize the geometry of all of this? And the answer is yes. The same proof works. And if you take the self-scalar limit, then you just find that is again, in this case, I don't have any massive particles at all. Otherwise, there's a more general statement. But in the simple case, we see that there's some connection on the full bundle that tells you about the soft theorem. And if the scalars are charged, there's something a little bit more complicated. There's a kind of a soft version of the Gaussian boson equivalence theorem, because a soft scalar, which is charged, generally will give a mass to some of the vectors, and you have to account for that. Okay, and here's a kind of a very simple example of how this works. So this is some kind of random non-minimal coupling, some dipole coupling between scalars, fermions, and vectors, and you can compute the three-point amplitudes of two vectors two fermions and one vector, and you can also compute the four-point amplitude with an extra scalar and see that indeed, in the self-limit, these are related by this covariant derivative. Okay. So I'm done with self-scalars. Now we want to ask, does some of this story work for vectors more generally? So let's start with the symmetry path. Okay, so the modern understanding of photons is that they're also Gaussons, and they're Gaussons for some higher form symmetry. So the usual Maxwell theory has a pair of higher form symmetries, electromagnetic one form symmetries. And indeed, just like for the pioneer had a shift symmetry, the photon also has a shift symmetry by some flat connection. And just like for the pions, the current for this higher form symmetry interpolates the photon. So if you act with these on the vacuum, you create photons. But unfortunately, this symmetry is broken by charged matter. But if it was still there, then the conclusion would be the same as for pions. So there is actually an Adler zero, which is kind of a trivial statement in hindsight, but interesting, I believe, that if you don't have any charged matter, the soft photon theorem is zero as a consequence of symmetry. Okay. In the case for pions, that's a very strong statement because the currents that we are actually typically broken, they're currents that are there in the UV. So they're currents of the UV complete theory. But in contrast, some of these higher form symmetries that we have are typically emergent in the IR. So they're not currents in the UV that are conserved. So I think this is a much weaker statement than the Adler zero because it's not non-perturbative. It's actually just valid where you expect the symmetry to be true. And also, the symmetries are abelian, so this is kind of a trivial statement because you know that, okay, so if you have a photon and nothing else, then the effective action is going to be a function of the curvature or of the field strength, which carries a derivative. Okay, so there's something more interesting that one can do. For instance, if one has like a higher group, then in the word identity of the zero-form currents, there's also some contact term that tells you that they mix with the one-form current, and then there is a double soft theorem, but I won't have time to describe that. Instead of that, let's go to the case where you have matter. And what's nice about these higher form symmetries is that they're robust. You cannot add any local operator that breaks them. It's only the charged matter. And I think morally, the soft theorem comes from that. I don't know how to make that precise, but it's a true fact that the masslessness of the photon stems still from the fact that these higher form symmetries are robust. And I believe that the same should be true about the usual Weinberg soft theorem. But let's just try this geometric approach and see what we get. Because in the case of scalars, sometimes we had a Gaussian where the shift symmetry was a symmetry. Sometimes we had just some VEV, and there was no shift symmetry, but we still could use this geometric perspective. So here, inside of the VEV, we are labeling the vacuum by this flat connection, and then we can ask, what does this geometric soft theorem give us? And actually, the same proof works. You can treat this flat connection as a spurion, and you can just ask if the same formula works. So there's a derivative with respect to this flat connection and the three-point vertex. And indeed, just by the fact that by gauge invariance, basically, the fact that you know that this flat connection only enters through some covariant derivative, the derivative with respect to this background field is just this simple formula. And if you expand the three-point vertex and you combine it, you indeed reproduce the soft photon theorem at leading and subleading order. Okay. In this case, there's no covariant derivative per se because the module space of Phi is flat. So this is a question. Are there more examples like this? Like I gave you some evidence that this is kind of a general formula that captures like the structure of soft theorems in general. So there's always some derivative with respect to some flat background that parametrizes where we are in the space of vacua, and then there's some connection that makes sure that we are still on shell. That because we are taking a limit of an on shell amplitude, then whatever operation we do here shouldn't take us away from on shellness. So the question is, does this work in general? I don't know. Okay, so with that, I come to my conclusions. Hopefully, I convince you that this geometric perspective gives kind of a new and general perspective on soft theorems for scalar moduli in general, even beyond Nambu-Goldstein bosons. And there's some hints of a general organizing principle for soft theorems, and it would be nice to make these more precise. And we can ask, can we find new soft theorems using this perspective? Can we find, for instance, soft fermion theorems beyond the usual soft Goldstino theorems? I think kind of hammering on this geometric perspective on amplitudes could yield a new perspective on the famous non-randomization theorems with supersymmetry, just purely from the point of view of scattering amplitudes. And also, I should mention that this is useful for organizing the standard model effective field theory, and people are currently using this geometric perspective to try to interpret collider data. So, so it would be interesting to see if this soft theorem is useful to construct amplitudes in the standard model AFT. And I think a big important question that remains is there a systematic way to move a finite distance in the moduli space? I told you how to move infinitesimal distances using the soft theorem, but of course, I always make the joke that one runs into Zeno's paradox. I want to go there, but every time I take a soft particle, I can only take a half step compared to the previous one. So is there actually a systematic way to derive amplitudes kind of at a finite distance? And there's some belief that this can be done. For instance, there's some evidence that the scattering amplitudes at the apex, or like at the symmetric point in the Coulomb branch, like in the massless theory, contain all the information that you need to reconstruct the amplitudes at any point on the Coulomb branch. So I would be interested in understanding that better. And with that, thank you. And yeah.
Questions?
Wait, can I ask? Okay, so what's in hindsight or 10 years on view of the IR triangle? You would say you want to replace asymptotic symmetries with just a moduli space of vacua, and then what's the role, what's the analog of the word identity making the soft theorem be universal for you, I guess?
Well, yeah, one of the points is that you don't need the symmetry to derive this. So I think if you know how to move around the space of vacua in general, then the soft theorem, that's what it tells you. Sure. Many times we need some symmetry to learn how to move around moduli space, and that's where the symmetry comes in, just like I showed you for the Goldstone case. So that's my current perspective. Yeah.
And so the universal form of the memory effect is coming because we know how to change the vacuum via the asymptotic symmetry story. And so you would have an analog of that because you understand how changing...
I just have an understanding of the soft theorem. I haven't thought about the other parts of the triangle, yeah.
Andy?
Yeah, a comment and a question. It might be hard theoretically to move a finite distance, but people are planning to measure it at LIGO, and what they're going to see is going to be... a finite move in the space of vacua, so it's up to us to be able to explain that. And then my question is, in the work of Kepek, Narayan, and Law, they made crucial use of the non-commutativity of double soft limits of opposite chirality, mm-hmm. which is something I've never understood very well, In particular, that means that the S matrix for soft particles simply isn't defined. And did you use that? And what would you say about that issue in general?
I didn't use that because I didn't talk about gluons or gravitons. But I would just say that the non-commutativity is just seeing that the moduli space is not flat. That's what you're learning when like different ways of taking the double self-limit give a different answer. And this has to do with the fact that the amplitude is not a function on the space of vacua, but in general is the section of some bundle that has curvature. So moving from here to here depends on the path that you take. And different ways of taking the double self theorem take you along a different path.
There's a question online.
Prahar, you want to unmute yourself and ask a question?
Which one, sorry? Yeah, so let's see. This one here. Yeah, so
moving along a certain path on the moduli space?
Yeah, so this term here, I don't think you can see my pointer, but the first term, this is an angle. So this is just a number. So I think, and this term I think you expect in general if you're just spanning something around some point. Yeah, I believe that one could kind of reverse engineer with path this corresponds to. I haven't done this exercise, but yeah, this is just some number, and this is what you would get from just the Taylor series of the amplitude. So I believe this.
The reason I find that not, I don't think that's true because you know, for any path, you can always then rewrite it in terms of taking derivatives, infinitesimal derivatives. And I don't think the first term can be rewritten in terms of derivatives acting on the amplitude, just like the second term you have.
Why do you think that every path is in terms of derivatives?
I can think of taking any infinitesimally, every path is just taking some derivative in a certain direction.
I mean, of the higher point amplitude, yes, because you're just expanding it. But of the lower point amplitude, I don't know, yeah. But yeah, I think this is pretty kind of, this is not a new statement, by the way. Like, even for pions, this statement has been made in the past, that there's a difference between...
Yeah, I don't disagree with the formula at all. I don't disagree with the formula. I'm aware of this. I was just wondering about the path interpretation. But okay, we can talk later.
Is there another question on Zoom?
As a day, would you unmute yourself and ask your question?
Hi, yes. Thank you for the very great talk. I was puzzled that you mentioned the system doesn't have a symmetry because as far as I understand, your scalar field is massless, so it has a shift symmetry. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that your system has a symmetry.
Not in general, right? I just need it to be massless. I just need it to be a flat direction in the potential. But for instance, the metric doesn't need to be shift symmetric. I just need it to be massless.
I don't see any other questions, so let's thank Julio again for a great talk.